Hello and welcome to Taking Your Talent to Main Street, the online business session of Gain Mindshare, where we discuss success strategies for a new economy. If you want to find out more, of course, you can visit us at our website at gainmindshare.com. Now, without further ado, let's get started. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome again to Gain Mindshare, and we have a very special program today. We're going to be talking to Felicia Gopal, and she's a certified financial planner. And if that's not enough for you, she's got an area of expertise that I think that a lot of you will be interested in, and it is college funding. And if you have, you know, if you have a kid or a child, they're in grade school. Maybe you start thinking about what you're going to be doing in terms of college. If you've got one in high school, it's probably time to start getting serious. And if you're right there at the door, where your son or your daughter, they're getting ready to go to college, you probably want to start thinking about how you're going to do it and even getting through the entire 4 years. And interestingly, Felicia, before we bring you on, I ran into a friend yesterday, and one of the things that she said was that her daughter had been going to to school. Everything was fine. And all of a sudden, her husband, I guess his income went up, and they adjusted the financial aid, and they adjusted the financial aid such that that the increase was someplace on the order of $10,000 in the calendar year that they would have to adjust, and it was almost as if, you know, his entire raise would be going toward the increase in tuition. So I think all this is pretty serious. So, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, and then let's dive into the subject.
All right. So, you know, the thing about me is I am somebody who has always been interested in education. My father was the first of nine boys to go off to college. He encouraged my cousin to go to college. He encouraged me and my brothers all to go to college. And, you know, so for me, this whole college thing is really kind of the legacy of my father, you know, because he got me interested in going to college, and now I'm out there trying to make it possible for other families to go to college.
Right. Yep. Now, so as a certified financial planner, so how did you develop this particular specialty, you know, when you wanted to focus on college planning in particular?
Well, the way that I described it is it really started with a $23,000 problem. One day, a mother came into my office with a college acceptance letter in one hand and then in a financial aid award letter in the other. And she was unbelievably proud of her son that he got into this college, but the college wasn't offering them the amount of financial aid that he needed. In fact, there was a $23,000 gap between the cost of the college and what they were offering in financial aid. And as a single parent, there was no way she was going to be able to kind of come up with that amount of money. So she came to me to ask me if I could help.
Yeah. So tell me now. I'm intrigued. So what happened?
So what happened was, up to that point, all I know is save for college, save more for college, and put more money into your college savings. But, I mean, those were really all I knew about the whole college planning process up to that point. And I really had no answer for a parent who was really up against the wall trying to figure out how they were going to pay for college. And so I had to tell her, well, you should have met me when your kid was two. And, you know, that was a completely unsatisfying answer for both her and I. And I kind of, after that, I just kind of swore to myself, I never wanted to be in that situation again. And I was going to find out if there was something I could do to help parents like her in the future.
Awesome. So now let's start with these parents, and certainly we want to get to this very serious and this crucial stage for those parents that you're talking about there. So let's start with first these parents. They've got a kid. He's in grade school. What should they be doing? Obviously, they should be saving money, but in particular, what kinds of things should they be doing, understanding they probably want their kid to go to college?
Well, it sounds a little bit ridiculous, but let me tell you, I start all conversations with your expected family contribution. So you've got a kid who is in grade school. I say, go out, find out what your family's expected family contribution is in grade school. And the reason I say that, Charles, is because if you are not going to qualify for financial aid in grade school, it's important to kind of know that in grade school. That means that you're going to have to save a lot more than perhaps you thought you were going to have to save. And so I think that's good information to have as early as possible. If not, then that helps you calibrate how much saving you're going to need to have in your hand when your kid goes off to school. So it's really twofold. First and foremost, to give you a starting point, and then the second one is to kind of help calibrate how much you need to save for college. Because here's the thing, Charles. Most parents overestimate how much financial aid they're going to get and underestimate how much they're going to have to contribute. It's always like that. And so I think that's good information to have in the beginning rather than at the last minute when you're really scrambling. Because here's the thing, Charles, if you don't save the money you're going to need for college, what are you going to have to do?
You are probably going to have to borrow it.
Yes, you're going to have to borrow it. And what's the other thing parents don't want to do? They don't want to have to borrow lots and lots of money to pay for their kids' college. So the sooner you can know that information, the better it is for you.
Oh, my goodness. Now, okay. We're moving on into high school, and I'm guessing some of those questions are the same. Let's say that, you know, your kids, freshman, sophomore year, boy, it looks like they're really doing well in school. They are probably going to be looking at college. You obviously want them to go to college. So what should the mindset be of those parents who are in high school and their kids doing well, and it's looking like college is a definite possibility?
So I'd like to talk to those parents about that college is a partnership. So your student's role in the partnership is to be the best student they can, get the best grades that they can, get the best test scores that they can, so that they have lots and lots of options in college choices when it gets to be time to apply. The parent's role is to encourage your kid to do the things that they need to, look for opportunities for them to do extracurricular activities, encourage them to make sure that, you know, I know this class is hard, but perhaps maybe we ought to get you a tutor to help support you in doing this. So that's the role of parents in that whole thing. And then the final piece is the colleges themselves. They're looking for the best candidates possible to fill their seats. So they're not just looking for students who are academically gifted, but they're also looking for students who maybe can contribute in another way. Perhaps they're good in athletics. Perhaps they're good with music. Perhaps your parents used to go there. So they're looking to fill their class. And so that's the college's role, is to put together a freshman class that is diverse and contributes to society in the end.
So now, when you've got a situation, and so I guess that the challenge, to some degree, seems like it's no longer just getting in. It's as you said, it's that parent that you met all those years ago that their son and their daughter, they got into college, but then they've got these two letters. They they've got to make some decisions, and sometimes I think unless someone has the presence of mind to come talk to someone like you early on, they're kind of in that predicament where they've got those two letters. So when you're there, it's junior year or in senior year, and you're starting to now get acceptance letters. And which is wonderful, and you're celebrating, and everybody's in a celebratory mode. But then you get these two letters. What is the game plan then, Felicia?
Well, it really kind of depends on the family situation. And it also depends on, what I mean by the family situation is it depends on whether or not you've got one kid that you've got to educate or you've got multiple kids that you've got to educate, because you cannot afford to make all your decisions and go all in on kid number one. You're
right.
going to borrow all the money that you can. You're going to do all that you can for, you know, bankrupt yourself, take money out of your retirement, and you can't do all of that for kid number one. If you've got kid number two and kid number three, that still have to be educated. So I think the most important thing, and this really kind of goes back to the previous question you asked, is there's a couple other things that I would suggest parents do. One is I also would suggest a parent who has a sophomore to start looking for scholarships in their sophomore year, which completely doesn't make any sense to parents because they're just like, in the sophomore year, they can't apply. But here's
sure.
the thing. Oftentimes, when there is a scholarship that you want to apply for, there is something you have to do. Like, you have to do some sort of extracurricular activity. You have
right,
to participate
right.
in their summer program. You've got to know all these sorts of things. And if you wait until your senior year, you don't have time to do all of those things in order to apply for the scholarship. So scholarships that you may be qualified for, you can apply for because you haven't done the minimum, which is be part of their program, go through and do the things that they want in order for you to do that. So that's the second thing. The third thing I always tell parents is it's really, really, really important for you to consider doing some planning around this. This is not a decision that happens overnight. You've had 18 years, 17 years, 16 years
right,
for you
right.
to start to think about it. It's a disservice to you, and it's a disservice to your kids for you to come to me at the last minute and say to you, just like, what can you do? Because we could have started planning much, much earlier in the process. The joke is, when parents often tell me, hey, I've got lots of time. And my response to that is often a number. And to them, it often seems like I'm not responding to what they just said, but I am. What I'm doing is I'm responding with the number of days they have until their kid graduates from high school. So
right.
for a parent who has got an eighth grader, I have an eighth grader this year. At the beginning of the first year, she had 1,739 days until she would graduate from high school. Doesn't seem like a whole lot of time when you
wow.
break down like that.
Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't. Now, when you start thinking of things like that, can you do this right? It almost sounds like there's some planning involved, but is this the point in time when you need to start sitting down with a professional?
Well, of course, my answer is yes. I think it makes sense, and because what makes sense, Charles, is one thing often affects another. If you are saving more into your college savings account, well, that's one thing. So you're able to let money grow tax deferred if you're using a 529 account. And so those are all kind of good things. But oftentimes parents will make the decision, I'm going to send my kid to private school. Well, if you could put your kids to private school, there's nothing wrong with that. However, those are dollars that you may not be able to use for college because you've now used them for their high school. So you've got to realize that these things have implications, and they affect different things. It also will, if you decide to send your kids to a private high school, it may also affect your cash flow, so you're not as able to save as much for college, and so it goes. And so, you know, oftentimes having somebody outside of your own household, look at your finances and bring these things up, brings them kind of to life, because you, as a parent, are just doing life. You know, I want my kid to go to the best school. The best school in my area is this private school, and so I send my kid to this particular private school. No problems with that, but just realize that it's going to have an impact.
Right.
Sending them to a private school may mean that you can't put as much money into your own retirement.
But now, okay, so you have these laws of unintended consequences, right? And you talked about the scenario a little while back that And this is probably gets outside of the college discussion, but it's affected by the college discussion. You've got people in their 40s and their 50s, and they're taking out loans. What is that impact for those folks?
Well, first and foremost, the one thing that I see affected is oftentimes they cannot retire when they want to. So they may have to push out retiring for, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, because they've now taken out this student loans, which they have to pay back, and they can't retire when they want to. So I think that's one of the things that is that saddens me, because what I tell parents, and it's not what they want to hear, but it is true, there is no there's no student loan program for retirement. You know, either you have the money or you don't. And if you don't have the money, then that means you're going to have to work, or right, you're going to have to live a lifestyle that perhaps you don't want to do. So I always say, and again, this is not what parents want to hear, take care of yourself first. Make sure that you're doing what you need for you, because there's always a way to get your kid through college. It may mean that they have to work. It may mean that they have to borrow. It may mean, they started a junior college and then transfer. It may mean, like my father that I started the conversation with, who went into the military and let the government pay for his college education. So there are choices that that can be made to make it possible for your kid to graduate. It may not be your ideal situation, but there's nobody who's going to come to the rescue for you as a parent if you've made the decision to put all in for your kid for college.
Are we having those conversations, though, about those alternatives, Felicia? Because it seems to me that the expectation is still the same, that my kid graduates from high school, they're going to go to, Slippery Rock, they're going to go there for 4 years, and whatever the financial aid is the financial aid. I realize that this is probably something we should do, but by and large, is this kind of thinking becoming more common among us, that there are these alternatives out there?
Well, I think oftentimes parents remember the way that it was when they were going to college and don't necessarily understand that when I was going to college, it was, for a semester, it was like $1,500. But right, for your kid, for a semester, it's now, $30,000.
Right,
so there's a big difference between what it costs when you were going to school and what it costs for your kid to go to college now. So they don't necessarily make that thing. The other thing is, and it really kind of goes back to what I said before, which is they overestimate how much financial aid they're going to get, and then underestimate how much they're going to contribute. Because the thing is that parents don't understand is your expected family contribution is really largely tied to your income. So if you have a high income, chances are you're not going to get need-based financial aid. And so,
right,
and so you got to know that. But then you have the conversation with the parents. Well, my kid is smart. My kid is athletic. My kid is, and I was just like, well, that's fine. Your kid is smart. Your kid is talented. Your kid is athletic, but you're applying to schools where they're not going to reward that. So I
right,
talk to a lot of parents who are sending their kids to, or want to send their kids to, really competitive colleges. Some of the really competitive colleges don't give merit aid. How do you distinguish between Susie, who's really smart, and Sally, who's really smart, and Tommy, who's really smart, at these
right,
colleges where everybody is really smart?
Well, everybody's smart, right.
Yeah. And so colleges don't make that choice. And so they often will give need-based aid, as opposed to merit-based aid. And then parents aren't always willing to look at what I consider different tier schools. So if you're aiming for the Ivies, there's probably a level of schools below the Ivies that would be more than excited to have your kid that will offer them more aid to come to that school because they know your kid could have gone to the Ivies. And so, right. You know, you have to have those conversations in advance to adjust parents' thinking and to adjust perhaps their students' thinking because, you know, look, my husband went to Stanford, I went to Berkeley, you know, we're kind of aiming for those types of schools. So, you know, but if I wanted to get merit aid, I've got to start talking to my daughter now because she's only been hearing Berkeley and Stanford.
Right, right, of course. Right,
her now
right.
About yeah. Other schools that she could go to so that she could do that. Otherwise, there's going to be a big mismatch. There's going to be a huge fight, you know, over the next 4 years when she's planning on going to, you know, those sorts of schools. And I'm just like, well, you know, financially speaking, we can afford these level of schools. And
right.
So if you don't have those conversations in advance, there's going to be upset in your household. And that is not how you want your child to be finishing out their high school years. You want it to be, I mean, it's going to be hard enough as it is for them to kind of go through the changes in their body, the changes with their friends, the changes, you know, the rigors of their coursework without also having to get them to start, okay, we want you to lower your aspirations. And I'm not even saying that it's lowering your aspirations,
I get it. tell me this. I want to come back to this scenario I talked about at the beginning, Felicia. And there's a family. There's this family and their kid. They got them through the first 2 years of college. Then all of a sudden, you know, one of the spouses, they make more. They both make more, and then the college comes back. And you talked about that expected contribution. College comebacks and says, okay, great, glad to see you're making more money. Now we want you to pay us more. Is that common?
I think the thing to kind of keep in mind, Charles, is the fact that you file your FAFSA form, the free application for federal student aid, every single year, which means that it is reflecting what happened last year.
Right.
So if your income went up last year, then your aid can change. They don't promise that your aid is going to stay the same every single year. If you're not making satisfactory academic progress, you're not going to keep it. If you had a scholarship that was tied to maintaining a particular grade point average and you're not keeping it, you're not going to get that scholarship the next year. So there's no promise that it's going to stay the same, and increases in your income will definitely affect your financial aid and often will do exactly what your friend saw, which is lower the amount that they contribute, which means that they're now asking the parent to pay more. It's an unfortunate part of the process, but it is the process.
So that means it sounds like that parents need to be having more conversations while the kid's in college, because, you know, it's a pretty serious game if what they're doing could affect how much they're going to end up having to borrow or how much the parents are going to end up having to borrow if they're not, let's say, maintaining whatever level of academic performance that they were supposed to in order to keep the aid that they got in the first place.
Well, you know, it brings up a story because one of the most unfortunate situations I ever had to deal with is a parent who called me in July. The financial aid year ends in June 30th. So that's
right.
The end of the every single year. So parent called me in July and said, look, I'm dealing with this school on this particular issue, and what I just got was this letter saying, okay, that $17,000 scholarship that we gave you last year, we want you to give it back to us. And you have to give it back to us before the next year when school starts in August. And you have to do that. And what happened was that, and this is really important for parents to understand, the school figure your kid is an adult. So they're sending all communications to your kid unless you get permission from your student to also receive the communication. So all the communication is going to the kid. So what happened was there was some form that was missed, and so the school starts communicating, hey, send us the form. 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 But they're only sending it to the kid. They're not sending it to mom. And so the kid gets the paperwork. He submits the paperwork. And in financial aid offices and offices across the world, paperwork gets lost. Yeah. So he submits it once, but he's still receiving notices after that saying, we don't have the paperwork, we don't have the paperwork, we don't have the paperwork. He says to himself, well, I submitted it. They should have it. This will work itself out.
Exactly.
And it didn't. It didn't work itself out. They never found the form. And so the result for him was, and this is the reason why this is a sad story, is because he had already been through 3 years of college. So we were about to enter his fourth year of college where he was going to graduate. And his parents are now being told, you have to give us back the $17,000. You know, because you didn't get up this paperwork, and this is the end of the school year, and so she reaches out to me, and I was just like, here's the thing, your kid, luckily, he's got a really strong grade point average, okay, so that is a help for him. And he's already been there for 3 years, so, you know, they already have a relationship with him. I go, see if they can get, you can get them the paperwork and see if they will alter that decision. I go, but the problem is they don't have to. They are under no obligation to alter that decision. And you may have to come up with $17,000 because your kid did not communicate until the last minute that he needed to get this form in.
This is really incredible. Now, this means then, and it sounds like one of the things that we're kind of coming to is that a lot of this has to be communication between. And so you don't just drop your kid off at Podunk U and stop talking to them and just expect them to come back at the end of the semester with good grades. You sort of have to be. It sounds like you sort of have to be talking to them all along.
Absolutely. I mean, this is, as I said, this is a partnership. The partnership, once you're in school, is the kid has to communicate so that the parents know that they need to give him whatever it is that they need to give him so that he can move on. Because it's not true that he'll be able to provide that information. So one of the things that is interesting about the whole financial aid process, they say that the student should be able to fill out the forms. But how many kids know how to take a tax return, take the information from a tax return, which they've probably never seen before because parents don't normally share their tax returns with the kids. But, you know, take the information from the tax return, put it into this form in the correct place.
Yeah, wow. So now, other than the conversations, and you talked about planning, you know, while the kid's in college and they're getting there near the end, what about, and maybe this is really kind of going off the deep end, I know we're coming up on 30 minutes, what about graduate school? So junior, you know, or you know, Sally, she's gotten through and she graduated and now that's over with and she says, Dad, I want to go. I want to get my master's. Now what?
Well, you know, I think this is part of the communication that happened before. So I think parents And again, I'm reflecting my own bias. I think parents are under no obligation to send their kids to graduate school. That's my own personal belief. However, a lot of parents don't necessarily believe that. Or some parents will say, well, I'll pay for graduate school if you can help me with undergraduate by going to this school instead of going to that school. So it saves me a bunch of money so that I can pay for grad school. And then the other thing about grad school is often paid for by the students themselves. And so you have to also think about that. So when I think about grad school, I think it's a decision that if you as a parent are going to choose to pay for it, first and foremost, I would communicate that. And or I would communicate that I am not going to pay for grad school. You choose to go to grad school, that you're on your own for grad school. Because the other thing is, for financial aid purposes, once you receive that first degree, then they're independent students and they're expected to file on their own information as opposed to the parent's information. So I think that those are all things to kind of keep in mind. You can, if you worked for an employer that had a tuition reimbursement program, you might be able to get, a portion of that paid for by your employer once you're working for graduate school. But oftentimes what I see is families or people borrowing for graduate school. And again, I think in terms of ROI. I came from accounting as my background, and then I went into financial planning. So I'm a numbers kind of gal. And so, I often will think about the return on investment. If I'm going to have to borrow $100,000 to complete my master's degree, then I'm going to want to have a job where I'm making pretty close to $100,000. But if I'm only going to get an additional $10,000 for my graduate degree, then perhaps I should consider something else. But again, that's how I feel. But I've met lots and lots of other families and individuals who have made the personal decision that, this is really important to me kind of internally, and I'm going to pursue this even though I'm not going to necessarily get the return on investment from it over, a short period of time, but I might get it over the lifetime of my career. So, it depends on who's paying the bill.
Yeah, it's almost as if the way I see it now, I almost feel like, when someone graduates from college, they ought to be, part of their exit interview is they need to sit down and talk to, it should be mandatory, right, that they sit down and talk to someone like you so that, as they start to make some of these decisions, they're making it at least on the basis of, ROI is objective, right? So even though, no matter how you feel about it, I mean, the numbers are sort of there. And they don't lie. One thing I was going to ask you is, I know we're getting long here, is you talked about borrowing money later on in life, and are you seeing that this could impact where mom and dad, they borrow a lot of money in their 40s or 50s, not into their 60s, but then later on, they need care. And they sort of need that income and that nest egg, and they don't have it. So it ends up that even though they spent the money for college, then the students and some of the other students, they've got to kind of come back and they've got to take care of mom and dad. Are you seeing some of those dynamics?
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing those dynamics. And where I'm seeing them first is they are now having to take care of their parents. And then after that, then they get older and less healthy, and then their kids are having to take care of them. Whereas, this whole borrowing thing is, there's a lot of stuff in the press saying that this is the next tsunami, economic tsunami that we're going to have as a country. People are borrowing more and more for college, And I understand the reasoning because college is the entree point, the price of admission for so many jobs, so that they feel like I've got to get a degree. But the other side of it is, at what cost? You've got to ask yourself, at what cost is this degree? Is there a way for me to kind of get to the finish line without bankrupting my future in right. order to do that? And I think that that's part of what I talk to parents about when I'm working with them. Is, you know, I'm the person who asks the question, and it's often the first time they've thought about anything other than go to school, get the degree. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm starting to ask questions, well, if you do it this way, the way that you're planning on doing, this is what I see being the outcome of that. So a scenario is I just was looking at a offer letter from one of my colleagues, and so her daughter got into a great state university, and when I looked at the financial aid letter, I was like, really? This doesn't make any sense to me. So first and foremost, the family had an expected family contribution, an EFC of zero, which means they didn't have a whole lot of income, and they didn't have a whole lot of assets. So mom and dad have very little income, very little assets. The expected family contribution is zero.
Right.
What the college was offering the child was $8,500 in student loans. That's the child. So that's the maximum that they could take out in their first year. Perkins loans, direct and indirect Stafford loans. And then what the kicker for me was $25,000 in student loans for the parents, their first year. And think about this, Charles, is the fact that if you think about colleges like dating, you want to create your best impression. So the best financial aid offer you often will see is in your first year. And so they're asking the parents to take out $25,000 their first year, and they have hardly any income and hardly any assets. So if the parents decided to have their kid go to the school and figure that she graduates in four, and that's not normal, most kids will graduate. The statistics is 47% of the kids graduate in 6 years.
Right.
So there's a lot of kids who aren't graduating in 6 years or more, but that's another thing. But assuming that this kid graduates in 4 years, then her parents would be taking out over $100,000 in student loans, hardly any assets, hardly any income.
I am sitting in my chair and just trying not to overreact emotionally. That makes my heart palpitate, what you just said. The kid is at $8,500 in their freshman year. And the parents are at $25,000 in their freshman year. And we know, as you said, that's as good as it gets. That frightens me.
And, the good news is the parents decided and the kids decided together that this was not the school for them. and I was just like, yes. I could pretty much tell you, 4 years from now, when the parents were at $100,000, we have no income, no assets. How are we going to pay back $100,000? They're now taking, 50% of my income to pay back my student loans. How am I supposed to eat and live in California? It just didn't make a whole lot of sense. The way that I describe the situation is that school was not a good financial partner for their family. They accepted the kid, but I think when you look at the offer letter, they were saying, yeah, you can come here, but you're going to really have to pay to do it. It's just like, We're opening the doors, and if you can afford to come, come on. We'll take your money.
Oh, man, Felicia, I know, boy, you've got, and I'm going to encourage everybody, if you're listening, that you go to the collegefundingresource.com. Felicia, she does a podcast, and I've been getting her newsletter, and I would encourage you sign up for her newsletter because it really does have, you know, some of the same level of information that she's giving us, just kind of a snapshot here in this interview. Obviously, she can't take years of experience and give it to you in 40 minutes. So I'm going to encourage you to reach out to her while, you know, your kid, whatever kid level your kid's at, if you haven't had a conversation with a financial planner, a certified financial planner, I think that you heard enough. You probably want to reach out to Felicia. How can they do that, Felicia? How can they reach out to you?
So the best way to reach out to me is through my website. I've got a contact form on there, and you can just contact me, and you can reach out to me. So, or you can call me at 201-453-9875, 201-453-9875. And my website is College Funding Resource. The word college spelled out, funding spelled out, resource spelled out, .com. And that would be the best way to reach out to me.
And the kid can be any place from 8 to 18. If they haven't had a conversation with someone like you, it sounds like at the very minimum they need to start thinking strategically with a professional.
You know, I completely agree. The years, my daughter is about to enter, my oldest daughter is about to enter ninth grade, and it seems like I just brought her into the world. And, you know, the days just, you know, the days and weeks and years just go by so quickly for when you're raising kids. And this is a decision that I think that you will do yourself a disservice if you put it off for very much longer. You'll be happy that you've had the opportunity to kind of talk through your situation, have somebody give it a fresh set of eyes, and help you kind of come up with your own strategic plan for how you're going to do this. Because ultimately, I find that my parents and the families that I work with are looking for really three C's. First and foremost, clarity. The second is confidence, and then control. Clarity about how they're going to pay for college, confidence that their plan will work and is the right fit for their family, and control over how they use their income, assets, and perhaps small business to pay for it all.
Everybody, this has been Charles Harper. My guest tonight, today, has been Felicia Gopal, and she's with College Funding Resource. Going over to her website and reach out to her. And we hope to be able to have her back. I know that things are changing rapidly when it comes to financial aid, and you know the public's discourse about, you know, what it means to go to college. And I know that's going to shift over time. And as these things shift, we want to have Felicia back. Felicia, thank you very much for being here. We certainly appreciate all the insight that you've given us, as well as the very real anecdotes that you've shared with us.
Well, it's my pleasure. And Charles, may I offer one last thing to your client?
Of course.
So what I would suggest that you do is head over to my alternate website, which is canigetfinancialaid.com, and that's just spelled out, canigetfinancialaid.com. There's a 10-question survey, and at the end you'll have an idea of whether or not you're going to get financial aid or not based on how you answer those questions. And I think that that's a great starting point for most of the listeners that you have.
Well, that's fantastic. I'm going to head right over there myself. CanIGetFinancialAid.com. Head on over there, guys. And again, I mean, it's better to know than to not know. And as we've heard today, you certainly don't want to be burying your head in the sand about this. So everybody, thank you very much for being here. Thank you again, Felicia. Everybody have a great day and a pleasant tomorrow. Take care.
Thanks for listening. If you need more help with your online business, join me at my YouTube channel at youtube.com/gainmindshare, or join me on Facebook at facebook.com/gainmindshare. Lastly, you can always join me on my weekly webinar call where I answer your questions about building your business online. You can join me there at gainmindshare.com/training call. Thanks, and I look forward to seeing you either on another show or in one of our webinar calls.